Welcome to Ecosystemic Futures, sponsored by NASA, Convergent Aeronautics Solutions Project, in collaboration with Shoshenworks. I'm your host this morning, Diane Finkhausen, CEO and founder of Shoshenworks. And I'm thrilled to introduce our guest today, Borja Blom. Borja is CEO of the Vertical Mobility Operating Company at Neom, where he's pioneering electric vertical takeoff and landing aircraft, or eVTOLs, in Saudi Arabia. Borja isn't just testing flying cars. He's also architecting an entirely new ecosystem that brings together cutting-edge technology, regulatory innovation, and real-world implementation. I'm so thrilled to jump into this conversation and welcome Borja to our series here. So Borja, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, Diane. It's absolutely a pleasure for me to be here with you today. I think there is a lot of insightful conversation that we can share together about how this new technology will be implemented in the future. And this is what exactly we're trying to do here, right? Before even talking about implementation, we really need to understand what is the technical and economical feasibility of this technology. Because as most of these industry players, they claim to have certain number of specs within the aircraft that still don't have been proved yet, that lead us to be at the forefront of this industry by implementing at the experimental level of the aircraft, at the experimental stage, what and how this will look like in the future. So such an amazing journey so far for the last almost 3 years here in Saudi Arabia, which I see that there is a huge appetite to become one of the early enablers of this technology in the world.
Yeah, it's so exciting. We've been imagining flying cars, flying vehicles for so long, and eVTOL really does unlock that incredible kind of milestone in mobility for society. It has the potential of opening up new regional economies and new personal opportunities for humanity. But maybe before we dive into the capability and the industry itself, maybe share with our viewers a little bit more about Neom and the big picture. What's the vision for Neom and kind of what it's solving for society?
So I think His Royal Highness Mohammed bin Salman, Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, have a very ambitious vision to not just turn the country into a new place in the Middle East, because we have previous experience like Emirates or Qatar, but he's also willing in an amazing act of generosity to implement or redesign how we live today. This is all about Neom. It's reimagining how the future will look like, trying to minimize those hurdles and those challenges that we face on a daily kind of life, from traffic to the verticality of the city, or also how we access all those cities. So there is a certain number of aspects that it needs to be challenged today that no one have done before. And for sure, Neom is becoming some sort of a beacon for how the future should look like. So the idea of being around here is just getting all the brightest minds that we can pack from all over the world to bring something that had never been done before. And this is where the real magic will happen, right? The only way to predict your future is to create it. So I think this is a fantastic quote where we all come together with no previews of bias or thoughts, just trying to make things in a completely different way, but keeping the feet on the ground. So it's not just a dream, it's a step-by-step project that it will be capitalized through different stages, becoming from a completely different design of the city to the connectivity, the mobility system, but it also how we understand cognitive cities, which is a very hot topic today, especially with these increasing presence of AI. So Diana, as I always say, when we look back no more than 5 years ago, we're not even talking about AI. Today, AI takes a big part of our life. So how are we evolving, and the amount of innovation that is coming through on a daily basis is so, so amazing. That's why we can set the foundations for the future to bring something completely different. And don't forget, Neom is not just the line or a simple city. It's a region which is pretty much the size of Belgium. So pretty, pretty big project.
It's extraordinary. And you do big visions, big, kind of big, bold initiatives like NEOM have really the magnetic appeal for all of the best and the brightest minds in the world, right? And you see that really showing up in the innovations, right? And really the goals. It seems that NEOM is taking on all of the wicked challenges, all the wicked opportunities faced by humanity, and taking a white page approach, saying, okay, what can we learn from our history, from what we see around us, but imagine white page and then just make it happen, which is really what you're doing with eVTOL. You're really building a mobility ecosystem from scratch. You have the luxury of looking at the technology landscape and beginning with a blank canvas, if you will, to build a mobility ecosystem from the ground up. So maybe tell us about that journey, if you will, Borja, your vision, some of your more significant milestones that have gotten you to this point, and what lies in that?
I lost you for a minute. Sorry, Diane. Some issues here in my end.
No worries. I could tell as I was here.
Sorry for that.
So Borja, it's really indicative of the opportunity that you're embracing with eVTOL. Right, you have an opportunity really to reflect on the history of aerospace and aviation, look at the technology innovation landscape as it's emerging and converging now, and really build a new ecosystem for mobility from the ground up. Maybe walk us through some of the key milestones and unlocks that you've been able to achieve so far, and maybe what lies ahead of you.
So, in fact, you're absolutely right. There is a huge challenge, a huge opportunity. But this is what we're here for, right? Imagine to wake up every morning, as I do every day, and think that you have a completely white canvas. So you don't have to look into all different aspects. You just have a completely, you know, kind of empty bucket that you need to fill with all the different moving parts that it needs to be in place in order to implement this new technology. I think there's certain things that we have completed here. Not being an OEM, not being one of those companies that they're hard fighting to get their aircraft certified with all this novel technology implemented, we have the chance to take our hands on one of these experimental aircraft. We conducted the first eVTOL test flight in Saudi Arabia back in 2023, which is the Volo City. It's one of the first conforming aircraft from Volocopter, and we flew it in a very, very particular environment like Saudi Arabia, where you can imagine this is not Europe, this is not US, it's high temperature, dusty environment. So there is so many factors that we had the chance to look into how this may affect performance of the aircraft. Imagine just on electric powertrain, how the heat will affect the performance of the batteries. This is one, right? As many other. How are you going to run all the ground test operations? How are you going to make sure that everything is in place? Understanding that the weight of the aircraft is one of the main components to make it feasible in terms of range. We're handling and managing a lot of composites. Those composites may affect it also by temperature and corrosion, because we're really close to the sea. So all those factors that we understand from aviation, traditional aviation, from commercial aviation and general aviation, is not the same to fly inside of US or do it through close to the coast, right? So all those things need to be, and again, reassess and validate on this new technology, because it comes with a completely new set of technology in place. And this is what we need to validate. So we try to validate this flight envelope parameters. So those parameters are necessary for building a credible certification and operational framework. Because when we look into two of the main territories when it comes to certification of this technology, we're talking about the EASA, European Aviation Safety Agency, but it also FAA, right, in US. So those criteria under Part 21 certification criteria is completely different. We have seen special condition for eVTOLs being published recently by FAA for Jovis and Archer, but it also the SEVTOL for EASA. That sets completely different parameters, because we're looking into how our territories are going to provide a particular envelope. So that envelope needs to be validated. This is one of the first things that the get us hands-on. So this is what I really enjoy, when you have your hands on the on the technology, you have the hands on the aircraft, and you start seeing and understanding how all the moving parts come together. But it's also important to go through the process that we have been working closely with GACA, General Aviation Civil Authority here in Saudi Arabia, where we help and collaborate across many different stakeholders, experts in these new technologies, how the initial eVTOL operational guidance should be put in place. This includes defining criteria for experimental flight permits, restricted categories and based on the operations. And this is kind of setting the path towards commercial certification and the future Saudi Arabia car parts frameworks. It's also important to that we're leveraging on all the lessons that we can learn from our colleagues in EASA and the SEVTOL, as well as FAA Part 23, 27, and ICAO frameworks. Just putting all together under the same kind of matrix, gap analyze, that we can understand what are their different authorities and moving parts coming along. Because at the end of the day, we need to make sure that everything is harmonized no matter where we fly. I know that at the beginning, the authorities taking a very conservative steps. I fully agree with that, because there is a lot of risk. We do not know how reliable is this technology yet. We need to fly a certain number of hours in order to validate what will be the potential safety precautions that we need to add to the existing parts. And that's why we're here. We're here building the regulatory framework that help us moving forward. There is also a very important topic that not many people discuss here, which is the economical feasibility and the business model validation. This is crucial to me, because whatever we have said before here, it is good for the industry. It's good. Let me build this analogy. It's good for the academia. So you know how good their universities are into pushing all those papers out and how they think and foresee the future on certain aspects. This is pretty much the same. So this is not just about academia. We have to conduct a detailed economic modeling to compare CapEx and OpEx for eVTOL, in particular for the operation in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. These include considerations for battery life cycle costs, potential infrastructures in the future, and the ground handling, which is also completely different. Our findings highlight that we will expect a high value, low volume operation at the beginning, because the current constraints on the battery technology. So I'll foresee early implementation of potential tourist demos fly, where you can just experience the opportunity to fly in a full electric, vertical capable aircraft. But this is, in my opinion, the most economical viable in the near term. These early operations also generate some sort of real revenue while technology and infrastructure mature. So we can kind of substantiate the initial stepping stones for this technology to be implemented. Things like stakeholder ecosystem development is important, but it also public and operator engagement. So we need to also consider what we have heard so many times, which is the public acceptance. So people need to like this in order to try and jump on, right? It remembers when the first train appeared in humankind history, people were calling that the iron horse, right? And people don't want to jump in it because it was too fast and it could cause some sort of health issues. So I don't think we're at that stage, because now everyone is so eager to try new things, to jump into electrification, but it also comes with all these aspects of sustainability and trying to make a better world, which also match with Neon Vision, right? Where everything has to be fully sustainable, and in as technology allow us, it should be also the best potential solution for the future challenges.
How are you balancing? Thank you, Borja. And there is so much in what you just walked us through. But I love the ecosystemic construct that you just painted, right? And for other folks that are really on the emerging side of new industries and just thinking about this, you have the space economy that is emerging, right? That has some very similar characteristics. You have technology sectors that are emerging that have very similar characteristics, where all of these stakeholders have to move in concert, right? They can't move in isolation, which is what you just very articulated very well. You need to have a shared vision for what an end state or end scenarios look like. But then all the components need to move together in concert, right? So typically, policymakers have the luxury of understanding how industry dynamics are operating. Really, what you're describing, Borja, correct me if I'm wrong, is basically policymakers that have to step along with the innovators to understand the ecosystem and the capabilities as they are emerging, and then think along with you, along with the innovators, and along with the other stakeholders in the system about beneficial governance structures, right? And how to put governance structures in place that safeguard security, right? But also afford for innovation, afford for some level of risk. How do you keep all of that in balance for other folks, say innovators and market leaders in the space economy or in some of these other emerging markets? How can you share some of your guidance in keeping all of those levers moving in concert and in relative harmony, if you will?
I think this is coming from the top down. As I say, I have the chance to discover this country, understand and make almost mine a vision 2030. And I would say this is everything started with great leadership. Because if we're talking about different dimensions within how to activate these collaborative governance models, right? So once we understand that our leadership here has a completely amazing vision and completely fresh, completely non-biased at all. They want to rebuild everything from the scratch. They want to start with a white canvas, as we say before, right? So that gives you a lot of freedom. But also, I think it's always around leadership. Once we got a true leader, it's super easy to follow. It's super easy to harmonize everything across the governance model. And this is what we're trying to do. No, we're breaking the traditional regulatory dictates industry complies in the case of the models. And we have to build a cross-functional working groups, including all the different stakeholders, let's say the authority, the OEMs, the aerospace manager, but it also urban planners or energy providers. These groups, they should define, or we should define, this is what we're trying to do today, a roadmap with all the safety cases, the operational frameworks, and the technology readiness milestone. So by doing that, this ensures that the governance structure are built in isolation from technology capabilities and operational realities is kind of walking together. Because as you said before, most of the times what we encounter in any other place in the world is a regulator conference, they set the rules, they set the minimum standards, and from that, we have to work on that. But by doing these kind of small iterative actions day by day, it helps us move into the right direction. And this is what I always like, no? I'm a serial entrepreneur in many different industries previously to before joining NEOM, from aviation to technology, because I'm passionate about it. And I always find that the secret sauce to be successful is to apply this agility and this agile methodology that is not very common within a highly bureaucratic structures. But when you change the leadership and you see the things from a completely different perspective is when magic happens. So build a shared vision through demonstrating and iterating learning. This is what I think is the key for everyone to success. I know anywhere else in the world, it will be a very big challenge to achieve this, because we know that we have created this new society that is full of bureaucrats and a lot of procedures that they were designed back in the days, like decades ago, and we're moving faster than the regulator, right? So the world is moving way faster. And let me call back to AI. So this is what currently is happening, right? You can now upload all the different regulatory frameworks in any of the industry and try to map out what are the difference between that. And it could happen within seconds or minutes, something that it would take back in the days, something like days or months, because there is so many people with different interpretation. The only thing that we need to do is train us together to forget about what we have learned and learn everything from the scratch with a completely different kind of mindset.
So right. And I, as we kind of walk around the world, right, that mental model of the industry landscape around the world, so many very mature sectors, right? I just think about the aviation landscape in the US. It's very mature, and to your point, very structured and regimented, and encouraging them to kind of unlearn a lot of those traditions and embrace more agility and perhaps even more risk taking is extremely challenging. And to do that, you have to kind of reset the expectations of the public as well, right? So it's basically unlearning and changing the model at a national level. So how do you, for maybe your colleagues in the US, what recommendations might you have for folks to embrace a little bit more agility, a little bit more risk appetite, balanced and informed risk? Is it embedded in the innovation models and the economic models, or how do we encourage the folks that are a little bit more regimented and structured, perhaps, to embrace a little bit more of the agility so that they can capture more of the potential of this innovation renaissance?
Absolutely. This is a critical point. I really think that you're right. And to reset the future of mobility, we don't just need to innovate within the industry. We need to reset the societal expectation. We need to change the public perception and even the regulatory mindset. That's where the real challenge is, right? Changing the model at a national or global level requires a multi-layer approach. And you know that this is not going to happen overnight. We need to address public mindset, regulatory agility, economic incentive, risk management frameworks. So there is a lot of things that needs to happen, right? From public communication and education, I think, is where everything started, right? So we really need to see what has happened in Saudi, right? Saudi is almost 32 million population. The education and the level of the population, especially among the young, is amazing. I haven't seen something like this in my life. So wherever you go, you got this super young, eager to follow the leadership and the vision to make things in a completely different way. So that's one of the main shifts in the narrative, right? From a control and mitigated risk, just because we have to accept what is on the highways, to demonstrate safety through real world testing. So this is what is happening, right? I think I saw something like that also in China, where we see that China is moving super fast. We used to look to China in a completely different way. I was there a couple of months ago visiting all the initiatives in the UAS and eVTOL space, and it's surprisingly amazing to see what's happening there. Guys are just jumping into those projects, building very minimum viable products. They try to test and iterate every time, so they don't go through the blueprint. They decide to challenge everything. And there is also supported by a very transparent communication with the public, using demonstration, open data, and getting the clear expectation of phase to all the rollouts and safety measures. Regulatory agility is a different topic. It's a little bit more complicated because it's part of a long history of kind of government structure. Change that. It really needs to pivot into a completely different scenario. How or when this shift happens, when economic uncertainty come across, right? When the you see that the competitors from outside, they're challenger kind of monopolistic industries, and now there's people coming with better ideas and more agility, but it also a better cost structure. That's when the government or the regulator comes across and say, hey, stop. We cannot be that strict. We need to be a little bit more flexible. Otherwise, we're going to lose so many opportunities because this is what is happening today. And this is what I think. It takes a little bit more of a leadership approach again. So someone has to take that and take the risk of not being, let's say, widely accepted by the majority, because you're challenging the status quo. So it comes with a completely different setup of items that it needs to be in place. It's not easy. And I think that's the main reason why I decided to come here to Saudi Arabia, because I saw that there is this unstoppable appetite to make things in a completely different way, which is amazing because they also embedded these new ways to approach things of what I love to always say as an entrepreneur, fail fast, fail cheap. It doesn't matter if you fail because we build success on the previous failure. So if you never failed, that means that you never took the risk. And this is something that we have to do. So answering your question, I think those are the main factors that we need to kind of readdress among different stakeholders just to figure out where the next opportunity is coming along.
Yeah, no doubt. I love that. I like to think of the fail fast, fail cheap paradigm as learning acceleration, right? Learning objectives and learning acceleration, because if you institutionalize what you have learned from those failures, it's not a failure. But you're right. And what I'm hearing too, underpinning all of this, is basically a massively different kind of landscape for talent, and basically the from academia through kind of a multitude of career pathways, but also a pretty significantly different public-private partnership. So I relate what I'm hearing back to what we have in the States, and I believe that this digital economy and this innovation renaissance, if you will, offers a really great opportunity for a new model in the public-private partnership. But that necessitates, to your point, regulatory agility and a little bit more appetite for risk. And I think you're offering up a lot of really useful case studies for the rest of the world to really kind of watch and learn from. You benefit from bold leadership, a really compelling vision, and basically an innovation and operation landscape that removes a lot of the friction of some of the bureaucracies that the rest of the world is kind of grappling with. So maybe walk us through what lies ahead. If we look forward 10 to 15 years, given this landscape and this mandate that you're leading, what does mobility look like in 10 to 15 years? And what are some of the major milestones that lie ahead?
Well, I think this answer comes also with the vision, right, from Saudi and its leadership. It is a lot of things are going to happen within the next 10 to 15 years here, right? So we will start with the Expo 2030. It's going to reshape the way we see and the way we are now living in Saudi Arabia. That will come with a lot of innovation because at the end of the day, Expo is part of showing the world how the future will look like. And I think this is the first time that we will see where the real future being implemented. So I will look into Saudi Arabia, like not like just the Expo venue, like the place that you go and visit, you pay the ticket, you walk in and you go through all the different venues. It's more of about experiencing what is happening. And it doesn't mean that you need to see flying cars and up in the sky moving you in a seamless manner. But I think it's more of what we say. I think it's all about understanding how society have embedded this innovation. So this is what I really feel Expo will come, right? Because we always look into the future into tangible things, like tangible assets. But we're, over the last decades, we're more into this soft world where software is reshaping everything. And just obvious examples like a previous taxi company to Uber today, where everything is based on a software platform. They completely disrupt not only the economy, but it also the way we move around is one of the things that we need to consider and we need to understand. So 10 to 15 years, and this is me dreaming, because at the end of the day, there is some aspects that I cannot control, as you may imagine, and those technical aspects that we have previously mentioned, but I would like to see the eVTOLs that they will be simply integrated into a multimodal transportation ecosystem. It's not just having them, because eVTOLs or VTOLs, helicopters, have been in operating for decades, and they serve a particular purpose within aviation, right? But these new technology is not about being capable to fly vertically or being on a powertrain that is powered by batteries. It's more about how we make this seamless integration. And this is the key. So it needs to come with a completely reshape of the cities, as we understand, because at the end of the day, there is some minimum standards when we're talking to infrastructure deployment that it needs to require safety measures, safety precautions, volumes, and so on and so forth. So that comes with a huge challenge. In 10, 15 years, I think we will be in a better position to resolve all these challenges because it's something new to us. And this is what we're trying to implement today. Urban air mobility, as it is, urban means in the city, connecting major hubs through dedicated air corridors. I think the concept of deploying air corridors is fundamental because at the same point, when we look into SOAR approach, so special operation risk assessment, we need to understand where the air risk and the ground risk. So when we design these kind of holes, wormholes, we need to understand that they comes with certain constraints that we need to transfer to the planners so they better understand how this will be implemented. So this is a major step towards the total implementation of this technology. And as technology evolves, that is something that we have seen in the battery space for the last decade, we should be able to move from urban air mobility or small little hubs to regional air mobility, which is currently happening, right? We have companies like Hertz Aerospace, Zero Avia. They're currently working on more sustainable run solutions that will somehow link secondary cities, offering faster point-to-point connectivity within the existing ground infrastructure is somehow limited, right? Everything depends on the maturity of certain technology, from budget technology to future hybrid electric and hydrogen propulsion. But it also the importance of designing the infrastructure. We talk a lot about the infrastructure. We talk about a lot about vertiports, but vertiports needs to be within this three dimensions design where everything is safely designed, in order to at least make this technology sustainable in the future. So 10 to 15 years, as I say, I always come into more in the personal level. I hope to see my kids flying people across the city on an eVTOL or an electric airplane, because both of them, they're passionate about aviation. I cannot deny that this is my fault, but they really love it. So 10 to 15 years, they will probably take me from A to B in a very sustainable, very state-of-the-art technology that it will be able to fly in a safely manner.
Love that. I love that. What a great vision. And no surprise that they've picked up the passion from you. And speaking of the next generation of leaders and operators, if you will, you're an educator as well. And so how are you igniting this vision in tomorrow's leaders in your education efforts? And what are some of the most important skills and qualities that you're trying to instill in the next generation, if you will?
Well, I love it because my two passions is one is aviation and the second one is education, right? I always say I had the chance to go through certain persons in my life, professional, but it also at the university level that really encouraged and were able to bring my passion and tell me, Borja, don't focus into the standards, go and chase your passion. Don't look for anything. Just go for it. And this is something I did. And this is something that I always try to bring to my students, right? It's not about me telling you, this is what you have to do. It's more about me guiding you how to think out of the box, how to come to me in X amount of time and challenge every single thing that you have learned from me. I would love to see that. But I always say is, particularly in aviation, everything is deeply interconnected, right? So once you touch these kind of attributes within a person, it becomes so powerful because we all come together, as I was saying before, with this leadership. It's part of leadership skills, right? We need to not only be resilient to see that failure is part of the journey and is probably the most important part of our journey as a professional, but it also how passionate you are. You shouldn't stop off doing what you think you have to do. I see now kids having access to absolutely everything. So remember back in our days, we were trying to find something about a particular topic. We have to go through these massive libraries and try to find where are the books, and those books were probably published like 4 years ago. Today, information comes on a daily basis, updated, refreshed. So imagine having access to all that and finding your passion to connect all the dots. So what is gonna come after 5 to 8 years from now with all these new generations? I think those that wants to make a big thing, they have all the ingredients. It's never been so easy. And this is what we are here for, right? We're here to encourage them and tell them, forget about the noise. Forget about what you heard before. Don't listen to your dad. Don't listen to your mom. The world is a completely different scenario today, and you can reshape it. And we have seen that, right? We see the innovation is not happening in McKinsey, it's not happening in the big companies, it's happening in this small little group of thinkers, doers, and makers, but they come together and they usually click in a very seamless way. And this is why we're here. As an educator, my mission is to tell you how I learned, not what I learned, which is completely different.
I love that. So, so right. It was such a paradigm shift when we moved to the digital native generations. Now we're moving into the AI and quantum native generations. It's going to be just such a massive unlock for them. I love that mindset that you're instilling in them, how to learn, not what to learn. And speaking of where innovation is happening, you yourself have founded multiple aviation companies as well. What do you do in your spare time? But maybe if you can help our, because we have a lot of entrepreneurs that we in our community, and they're listening to you here today. So maybe if you can share some of your perspective, what's different about building this emerging eVTOL space versus building aviation, right? In an aviation space for entrepreneurs that are maybe in both spaces, how would you contrast the two?
It's a good question, because at the end of the day, I think for me, following the existing standards into traditional aviation helped me understand and get a proper foundation on what is needed from the regulatory part of the industry, right? It's a highly regulated industry. You really need to understand how to deal with the regulator, but it also how to follow to be compliant with all the different aspects of it. I always say that the opportunity is where most of the people is not looking at, right? And I'm that kind of person that I don't accept a no. I'm not saying it in the wrong way. I say, can we do this? And say, no, it's not possible. So then that's what triggers me to jump into that particular matter, right? Or topic. So as an example, I was trying to solve some issues with these revenue management system within my first airliner. And I was going through the industry and say, I want to do this. And they say, well, that's not possible because our system is being built for the last 20 years like this. And no one came with this particular requirement. So what I did is, well, I built it myself and I started building a software company that helped me operate in a more efficient way, my daily operations. So this is the kind of mindset that we need to implement, is not being absorbed by the corporate world. Because when we look into big companies, big corporations, it's pretty much like we mentioned before about the authority, right? It's highly bureaucratic and they set some very rigid standards that you have to follow. So there is no room for innovation. How do we implement this new mindset? Is giving the freedom to those that they are willing to take the risks to move forward, understanding that, and again, we need to build an ecosystem within the companies or within the countries where we foster those guys to fail, because we will collect a lot of learnings out of this failing. So this is what we want to do, right? We want to pace of innovation in a completely incremental way, right? New ways, new systems. Everything needs to come into a place, and you need to get that kind of entrepreneur, determined, and forget about the nose and just take it by yourself. So I always say to my team, we're here to take the world by storm, guys. So whatever you do, I will back you. I'll be behind you and I will support you, because I think this is where real magic happens, right? For those joiners that wants to do things in a completely different way, that's where we have a lot of things to learn from.
So right. And as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking about a lot of the space entrepreneurs with whom we work, and that necessity, right, of the ecosystem, of teaming arrangements, of collaboration. And as an entrepreneur yourself, and as basically an architect of a new and very important ecosystem, what advice would you have for the entrepreneurs that are listening about the balance between protecting your IP and teaming, right, and speed and collaboration? Are ideas and speed and collaboration the new IP, or how do you strike that right balance as an entrepreneur who is innovating both in technology and within the context of a new marketplace ecosystem?
I'm not a big believer of IPs. At the end of the day, I think that if you're doing something good, you're doing something right, so most of the time it will work because you have the components to make that thing happen, right? I heard many times that in the case of Elon Musk, one of the most prominent entrepreneurs on these recent years and recent history of humankind, he's challenging everything, right? He's challenging absolutely all main transport modes, from electric cars from Tesla to SpaceX. So we see that he is so into understand that the magic will happen within the team, that IP protection is not a big thing. I understand that it could drive us through a completely different approach when conducting business, which is keep your IP protected and probably flip it, sell it, get an exit and achieve some sort of financial freedom or earnings, which I also respect. I think I'm entrepreneur by heart. I think I'm some sort of unconscious in the way that I approach business, because I don't really look into small little details. That's what I think your question is correct. By clicking with those that they're more oriented to protect and manage things in a more, let's say, standard way, it will help us to obtain different earnings. But this is where I think my educational and educator side come along. I'm able to give. I'm a giver. I just want to do things because I want to do it, and because it's just right a little bit of my history, right? I'm concerned about what I'm doing and not what the people is thinking about me. I've been criticized many times because we probably exit some of my companies not getting all the earnings and all the benefit that I could have. But I keep saying to everyone, right, what a hell of a ride. I had those amazing times that I have ups and downs and all these challenges. And for me, it was like, I don't care. I'm not looking into what is the final outcome. I'm just trying to have fun and challenge myself and put myself in those uncomfortable situation that get you out of what is expected from you. So I'm also addicted to adrenaline. I practice all of kind of extreme sports. So at my 47 today, I still do some crazy sports that I shouldn't be doing. But at the end of the day, it's part of me. It's my DNA, and I'm not going to change that now. So you need to choose, as an entrepreneur, what side you want to take. If you want to follow the typical model where everything comes into very highly regulated with contracts and legals and all that stuff in order to secure your project, good for you. But there is some crazy people like me that we just do these things because we want to have fun. Because at the end of the day, I think life is all about having fun, right? If you're able to manage your time to enjoy every single minute of what you do every day, that's probably the biggest reward that you're going to have in your life. Forget about the money. Money will come. And recognition in terms of being in the books and of being the inventor of XYZ, I think is good. And it will make your grandsons feel proud of it. But if you don't have fun while doing this, then for me, it doesn't make any sense.
Signature of a real difference maker and world changer. Right there, folks. So right. And I think that's the hallmark of the folks that are really kind of pushing the boundaries, carving out the new horizons. So I am so grateful for your worldview, for your work. And I know we're coming up on time here, but I would be remiss if we didn't close with this, because your vision and your work and also, the work that NEOM is leading just overall is just so inspiring. Maybe if we close with, for our listeners, what keeps you this excited? What keeps you most excited about the work you're doing? What you hope NEOM demonstrates to the world about the future of mobility? What is the possible that you can imagine, and what charges you up every morning as you as you dive into the work of the day?
Oh, it's so good because I just listen to you and I get goosebumps. Why? Because I see myself from the outside and say, well, look at me. I'm in the middle of the desert, literally in the middle of the desert, building something that is going to be in 50, 30, 20, 10 years from now. It will be a completely new part of humankind history. So imagine that someone is asking you, how do you feel of being part of building the pyramids or the Great Wall of China? So the answer is I cannot even believe it, Diane. I mean, every day that I wake up and I look into the place, everything, every day something changed. Something new pops out in the middle of new rows, new, everything is new. It's like, for me, imagine as a kid being in a candy store and you got all these different things to pick from. It's just a dream. It's absolutely amazing. Then you come into a place where everyone is so eager to challenge the status quo, to do things in a different way. You sit down with folks that we all live in the same place. And we tend to just jump into these conversations, share our thoughts, our learnings, our dreams. There's also a lot of criticism, right? When it comes to things that we have done wrong, but it's part of the learning, it's part of the process. But I think it's an amazing experience. It's like just being part of it for the time that I've been here is such a dream. I will always say to my kids, say, listen, this is where you shouldn't even think about setting any boundaries to you. Look at me. I started like years ago working in the corporate level for a few years until I did decide that this is not for me. Jump into the unknown world of entrepreneur where everything is like so risky. I was able to succeed on some of my ventures. I fell hard in so many others, but I never surrounded. So I was pushing without knowing that this will be my next milestone, because probably at that time, it was not even the concept of neon in the table, right? And all of a sudden, one day, some of the people that I met through just building network and sharing thoughts and openly discuss, not keeping any of those IP with me, just saying, this is my idea, this is what I'm working on, I would love to hear from you. They call me and say, listen, why don't you join this project called Neon? And when I saw that, I was like, wow, this is literally amazing. What a privilege to be here. What a privilege to be at this level of just marking with my team, because it's not only me, it's my team. It's full Southeast and super young guys, extremely talented, as I said before. Then I see them growing 27, 30s, and they were the first one to put their name in Saudi history, because they were the first one to fly an eVTOL. So compare this to Wright brothers, right? We got Abdurrahman, Rakan, Bezer, Omar, the 20s, 30s, and all of a sudden, these guys just made history. So look at me. What is my reward as a person? I was part of it. I was kind of enabled for them to be part of this. And I feel so proud of them. And I feel so grateful to be part of this history, because I think this is all, right? Is the passion, is the how we drive ourselves through motivation. No matter what's happening around you, you always find a way to make things incredible. And this is what we're doing here.
Yes, yes, exactly right. And this gravity well, right, of innovation and passion and change making becomes the bright light to which the best talent, the best entrepreneurs, right, the best minds will and ideas will naturally gravitate. So it's unthinkable what lies in front of all of you. And I can't wait to continue to watch your headlines, follow your headlines, and continue our conversations. So keep leading on, and we'll keep enjoying kind of what you're building and benefiting from your great innovations. So I thank you. I am so grateful, and I'm so excited for you and your team and your kids for what lies ahead. And for our listeners, hopefully you have been as inspired by this work and this conversation as have I. I'm so grateful, Borja, that you've joined us today. And for our listeners, once again, that was Borja Blom sharing insights from literally the cutting edge of mobility at NEOM. And as we discussed, there's so many highlights, but just a few, of course. Personally, what strikes me most is about Borja's work is how it exemplifies ecosystemic thinking, design, and operations, right? Recognizing that these breakthrough technologies will only succeed at scale if you're simultaneously working with the policymakers, building the frameworks, the infrastructure, the business models, and the training programs, right? Working with the education system and cultural acceptance, right? So that everything moves in relative concert in really a beneficial trajectory. So Borja, thank you so much. So grateful for the conversation and for your work, and look forward to continuing the conversation from this point forward. For our listeners, if you enjoyed this, please like and subscribe, and you can catch additional conversations at Apple, at Spotify, at shoshimworks.com, and all your favorite podcast sources. So again, thanks to all. And Borja, any closing thoughts?
Thank you very much, Diane. I can only say that you're doing such a great job just to bring all these minds to your podcast and to your episodes, just to bring a little bit of what is happening across the world. And as you said, and I will always say to all the people around me, there is no limit. Your mindset can take you, your brain can take you to whatever you want. Just put the hard work that you need and believe in yourself. So if you do that, there is no limit. So I welcome everyone to discuss any of these topics. I'm always happy to follow up with anyone in any of the platforms that I'm active, and happy to hear, because what I say every day, I feel grateful to have the opportunity to discuss with people like you and learn a lot of your about your job and what you're doing. So thank you very much for an amazing contribution. And once again, thank you very much for having me today here with you.
Amazing. Thank you again. Thanks all.